football in those days, just post-war, was influenced by politics because the Chinese were going to have a revolution and so on. He knew that Singapore itself did not have an Olympic committee. In order to play, your nation has to be affiliated to the IOC. And Singapore didn't have any such committee until 1940s, actually 1947, but they were unable to put together a team anyway. There weren't enough good players to justify the time and the expenditure. So for him, the only option was China.
You're listening to BiblioAsia Plus, a podcast produced by the National Library of Singapore. At BiblioAsia, we tell stories about Singapore's past, some familiar, others forgotten, all fascinating. Football is a sport many Singaporeans love, though I'm not sure if the game loves Singapore back quite as much. Sure, we've had our local heroes, and for those of us of a certain age, names like Fandi Ahmad, Quah Kim Song, and V. Sundramoorthy spring to mind. But they've never really played football at a very highest level, like the World Cup, for instance. We do, however, have someone who came very close. Chia Boon Leong played football at the Olympics in 1948. I'm Jimmy Yap. With me in the studio is Nick Applett. Nick heads the sport heritage team at Sport Singapore, and he was also a friend of the late Boon Leong. Nick is here to tell us all about the man and the legend. Welcome to BiblioAsia Plus, Nick. Thank you for coming down.
Thank you very much for inviting me. This is a very pleasant new experience.
You wrote a very interesting story in BiblioAsia on Chia Boon Leong, who has been described as one of Singapore's most talented footballers. And his nickname was Twinkle Toes. So tell us a bit about this nickname. How did he get his nickname?
Okay, the story begins in 1951, when there was a touring team from Sweden, I believe, Scandinavian team, managed or coached by an Englishman called Mahon. And he was watching the game that they played. It's almost like a charity game, an exhibition game, something like that. But the coach was very impressed by Boon Leong's movement, the quickness of his thoughts, and his twinkling toes. And so the name stuck because of an Englishman representing a Scandinavian team in Singapore.
Very, very international. Give us an idea of how talented he was.
Mm-hmm. I can do this probably in two ways. Mm. One is to describe slightly one of the games that he played or he was represented in when the team went on tour to China. The second way is because I never actually saw him play, I'm reluctant to make an objective outright statement. So I'm going to quote somebody that I know in Singapore who saw him. So the playing example was when the Lianhua team visited Shanghai.
Okay, so first of all, tell our listeners, you know, what's the Lianhua team?
It's like the collective Chinese of Malaya team, which was going to visit various countries in East Asia. He was involved in the match against the strongest Shanghai team, the league champions. And there was a huge crowd watching the game. I think it was probably quite cold because it was in November 1947. And the Lianhua team beat the Shanghai team, I think it was 5-3, something like that. Boon Leong didn't score any of the goals, but he so impressed the fans that they mobbed him at the end in a friendly sort of way. And they sort of escorted him out and made a big fuss of him. And I think that was a key moment for him in establishing how important he thought the fans' responses to him were. He clearly was the best player on the pitch. Today, we would talk about assists, you know, that he was helping to create goals and so on. But based on the responses of the fans, Chinese fans, to him alone, not to the rest of the team, I believe he was a very, very good good player.
I mean, most of the time, if the supporters of the home team don't generally go off and congratulate the opposing team who've beaten the home team.
Who've beaten to exactly. So they must have been impressed. Subjective view, okay, fair enough. My second illustration concerns a gentleman called Dillon, Mr. Dillon, who was the Secretary General of the Singapore National Olympic Council. And this example actually happened in May last year when we were publishing book two, The Rocky Road. We were talking about Boon Leong. He was one of the highlighted individuals who had been playing during the time of the book covers. And I thought, I'll be very cheeky and to the audience, and I say, look, I'm not really sure, but I know he was very, very good. Some people say he was just as good as Fandy recently. Mr. Dillon is sitting in the front row in front of me, and he just says he was better.
Okay.
And this is somebody who'd actually seen him play. But it's a dangerous thing to undermine Fandy's status.
Absolutely, absolutely.
But Boon Leong was one who could do it. So I'm fully in favor of reinforcing that view that, you know, I use the words, he was in the same class as Fandy. I think it's safer to say that.
How did Boon Leong end up in the Olympics?
Yes.
Playing for China, even though he was born in Singapore, right?
Born in Singapore, did not speak Chinese.
Oh, I didn't realize he didn't speak Chinese either.
This just makes it even more interesting. Where to start, really? Football in those days, just post-war, was influenced by politics because the Chinese were going to have a revolution and so on. He knew that Singapore itself did not have an Olympic committee. In order to play, your nation has to be affiliated to the IOC. And Singapore didn't have any such committee until 1940s, actually 1947, but they were unable to put together a team anyway. There weren't enough good players to justify the time and the expenditure. So for him, the only option was China. And they knew all about him in China, partly because of the Lianhua tour in 47, how well he had performed, partly because of how he played against some of the Chinese touring teams, like Tsingtao was one that came along.
And this was in 1948, the London Olympics. And China, he was in the first 11.
They played one game against Turkey,
which they did not do so well.
No. I think it's really hard luck to go all that way and to go straight into a knockout competition. And you lose in the first game, that's it, bye-bye.
That was very, very painful.
It's very painful. But, I mean, they knew what the rules were before they went. So, but whereas nowadays, you have group stages, at least three games before you move on.
You met Boon Leong himself, didn't you, about 20 years ago? Tell us about that meeting.
The first meeting was at Barker Road Methodist Church. With his wife, he used to come along to the early morning service. And then they used to live in Gold Hill, which is just a short step away. He looked like a well-brought-up, smart, nicely-turned-out gentleman. And I thought, I want to go and say hello. You know, I know who he is, and this is my chance to meet him. And his wife was there as well. And very easy to get on with him, the main reason being talking about football. This was the central thing in his life. So I explained who I was and I introduced my wife.
You were working for Sports Singapore at the time?
I was at NIE, NTU, teaching the teachers. So I was there until 2019. So in a sense, at heart, I'm an educator. I'm qualified as an educator. I've only been at Sports Singapore for 4 years now. So we met, and it became very clear that he was somebody that I wanted to know better for my research. So I forget how we did it, but we arranged to be invited to his house.
You invited yourself over.
Not on that day. It took a little while. But we went to visit, and Li Chu, his wife, would make some nice little sweet things to eat. And, but importantly, he would show me his albums, with the press cuttings, and also his medals, or at least some of his medals, because he didn't have all of them. So that's how we met him. And it created a family connection. So my wife would always come along, and she would talk to Li Chu, while I would talk to Boon Leong about his football. So that's how the relationship started. And I forget which one it was. They had a wedding anniversary. Oh, no, maybe it was his 90th birthday. They had a celebration at the Shangri-La. And he asked me if I would talk about his career.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah,
so quite something for an Ang Mo to go along to the birthday party and literally be asked to go up to the front. And there were 200 or 300 people there, I guess. You know, it was a big deal. So my job was to do a presentation and to talk about him and about Li Chu. And I revealed some of those details about their courtship.
What was Boon Leong like as a person?
A very, very gentle, soft-spoken. He was proud of what he'd done, what he'd achieved. Things like the Lianhua Tour, things like being a representative of Singapore at the Asian Games. So he had the chance to do that, not represent China. And he was also a manager for the Singapore team the year after they won the Malaya Cup in 77. He was the manager in 78 when they didn't do quite so well. And then somebody took over and they won it again in 1980. So that was like the golden era. So he clearly had some impact. He would clearly have been inspirational, you know, to the players who were just being introduced to the Kallang Roar, Kallang Wave. So he had a large role to play. And he used to take squads over to England to train. He played against other countries. So he got very, very involved after that. So he was caring and sharing. He was very, very keen to go and watch the big games at the National Stadium.
Oh, right.
Even the Sports Hub. Yes, he liked to watch, even though he couldn't play anymore. This was in his heart, you know, obviously.
Obviously, you knew Boon Leong, and so that, you know, that helped you to write the article. But tell us a little bit about the research process, because you couldn't just rely on your 20 years of conversations with Boon Leong to write about him.
No. It's been an interesting process. When I first came to Singapore, I was not interested in history of sport.
When was that, by the way?
I came at the end of 1985. Started work 1st of January, 86. And I was employed to teach sport psychology, motor learning, as well as all the different sports in a practical sense. The catalyst, and this is worth knowing, is meeting up with Tang Pui Hua, the first female Olympian from Singapore. There's a bit of a convoluted story behind all of that, but that was the...
I'm so sorry, but for the listeners who are tuning in, Pui Hua, what sport was she in?
She was an athlete. She was a sprinter and a hurdler. She went to the Olympic Games in 1952, which were hosted in Helsinki. And she would normally have been engaged in interstate competitions, into Malayan state competitions. And she dominated the scene for, I don't know, a period of 3 or 4 years. Very, very difficult to be a woman competing and to commit yourself. At the time, girls of her age, she was 19 when she went to the Olympic Games. And she was then expected straight away or almost immediately to get married. So she was the catalyst for doing research. And the initial method of research in history was actually to talk to interview people. And that has sort of pretty much stuck. But it's not the way that provides the most hard evidence of things. That's where newspapers come in, archives come in, and the archives on the newspapers, newspaper SG. And I wouldn't have been able to do anything but for that source of information. In the early days, there were many, many articles written, particularly about football and so on. There are not many biographies, autobiographies to refer to. There were some periodicals or journals that occurred back in colonial times, one called British Malaya, which clearly focused on the expats more than the locals. But it tended to enrich the sense of the culture of sport and how it was developing. So tapping into these different sources led to an increasing interest in writing. So the first book was the one about Puy Hua and her two successors, Mary Klass and Janet Jesudarsan. That sort of got me going. If three Olympians, what about the others? Who's going to write about the other Olympians? And so it became an important personal task to write a book, Singapore Olympians.
There's something special about sporting heritage. Mm-hmm. I was there at the launch of your last book. Mm-hmm. And the president, you took him around, didn't you, the exhibition. He was very interested. He was taking out his phone and taking pictures of the exhibits on the standees.
Yes. Perhaps I should tell you part of the story of that. I'd be very guarded because people are going to hear this. I'm acquainted with the president.
Ah, okay. You have coffee with him regularly.
No, I wouldn't say that. There's an interesting story that goes with it. A couple of years ago, I was advised by Tekin, you should talk to Tharman Shanmugaratnam, who was the senior minister at the time, because he is a sportsman. He understands these things. He will have some perceptions about the government view of sport and so on. So I said, okay. So I arranged an appointment, or tried to arrange an appointment to meet him at the Treasury, which is where he had his office. My attempts to arrange like an interview fell far short of my expectations. They confirmed, okay, you can come on Friday, 5 o'clock, and he will be happy to talk to you. Okay. Phone call just before, sorry, senior minister is busy. We have to postpone. Okay. Next week, same thing. Friday, 5 o'clock. Phone call. Sorry, senior minister is busy. Next week, phone call. Yes, he's prepared to meet you on Friday at 2 o'clock. Okay, that's great, and I'll get ready for that. Now, with my advancing years, I thought about the two previous weeks. Friday at 5 o'clock. Friday at 5 o'clock.
Oh, no.
This time it was 2 o'clock. So I'm sort of gearing up. I'm having a bit of a snooze at home, getting ready to go down. Phone call. The PA. Oh, Nick, are you nearby? Are you coming? And I said, what, it's 5 o'clock, isn't it? No, this interview is 2 o'clock. How long will it take you to get down here? Because he's going to wait for you, sort of thing. Okay, so I rush, I go down. There's a thunderstorm when I get down to the Treasury, and I'm not sure exactly where to park. I probably end up being an hour and a half late.
Oh, no.
But, as you can tell, I wouldn't be telling this story if there wasn't a happy conclusion to this. Tharman was brilliant. It was as though nothing had happened. He'd been working on something else. He came in, and I think we talked about sport and about him, maybe for an hour and a half.
Oh, really?
There was never an issue of, okay, well, let's make this quick. And he was brilliant. He was perfect. And I presented him with a copy of book one, The Colonial Legacy. When book three was due to come out, I thought, can we invite the president, because now he was in line, he was going through the election process. Can we invite him along? Do I have any leverage, even though I was late?
Very, very late.
So I did send him an email, and there was no reply. And I'm sure it was because this was during the presidential election, and he's a very busy man, and he can leave that to one side. So I spoke to my reporting officer, Bunyi, at Sport SG, and said, do you think there's a chance that we can invite him? And he said, Nick, you can't invite him. This has to be very official to invite the president. And he said, let's go and talk to CEO Alan Goh. And the two of them had a quick chat. And this was around about the time that the Singapore team was going to the Asian Games in Hangzhou. And CEO was going to be going up as part of the delegation. And he said, let me have a word with the minister, Edwin Tong. See what he says, if he thinks this is appropriate. Edwin Tong was already identified as the guest of honor. And so to invite the president may have been problematic. Anyway, Alan Goh, CEO, goes up, talks to the minister, and in principle, they say, yes, this is a good idea. He is a sportsman. He will be probably interested. So please go ahead and invite him. But I think because of his interest in sport, and maybe because he wanted to meet this guy who'd kept him waiting. I don't know. But he was wonderful. He was so affable.
He was clearly interested. You know, yeah. I've been to these things and people just walk around and nod. But he's stopping. He's taking pictures with his phone. He's talking to you. Yeah. I did not realize that he was that much of a sportsman. What sports?
He was a hockey player.
Ah, okay.
So, yes. But I think he was probably also a cricketer, maybe other sports. It's quite common for people of that generation to be multi-talented. Yeah. Nowadays, it's not so easy. Yeah, so he was a hockey player.
Sporting prowess and achievements of sporting excellence are very inspirational,
mm-hmm.
right? So most people are not that interested in heritage. Mm-hmm. But you tell them, so-and-so had won an Olympic medal. That's like a big thing, isn't
yeah.
it? I'm so glad that actually the Sport Singapore is putting effort into Singapore sports heritage and
I
doing
think
all this.
To be fair, we must give credit to the president himself, his demeanor during the whole process. That is helping us because other people are aware that he's connected, that he is a sportsman. And lots of people wouldn't have known that either. And so I think it helps create a good, positive environment for sport heritage. And now you see, we can always bring in, the president launched this book. The president was at our exhibition.
Nick, you know, you've been so wonderful coming today for the podcast. We've sort of come to the end of the substantive part of the podcast. Now we want to try and turn to lighter topics. Right? You've written a series of books about Kasparov and Karpov.
Yeah.
You know, so you obviously know a little bit about chess. Chess and sport, how are they similar?
How are they similar? The easy answer to the question is chess is sport.
No, it's not.
No, the normal approach is to say
there's no
physicality. Ah, now you'd be wrong there. It's a highly physical activity. The argument against chess is, you know, you're sitting down, there's minimal movement and so on. And that's not wrong. In one of the world championship matches, Karpov lost 7 kilos during the competition.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Because the body has a mental component as well, which uses up energy and so on. So often the common argument is there is no physicality in the way that athletics is running and football is kicking a ball and running about. But it is physical. It's at one end of a spectrum, let's say, in fairness. But in all other ways, all the other components are parallels to what we would consider traditional sports, the cognitive side, the wanting to win, the dedication, the commitment to training time and so on. In every other way, it's like sport. And even on the physical side, there are players today who have a very rigorous physical training regime.
Oh.
They have to be fit in order to go into some of these competitions, which are very rigorous competitions anyway. So maybe during the last, 30, 40 years, physical training has become part of training for chess.
Oh, I did not notice. Yeah.
So it's not just a sit down and relax down and just move pieces and so on.
Take a bite out of your cheeseburger.
So my position would be, yes, it is a sport. Because in my case, it satisfied some of the same desires as when I was at school, I played rugby. let's say cricket. And on rainy days at playtime, you had to go inside. So what can I do that is competitive? I think this is the key. The competitive side of chess makes it a parallel to these other things. But you do it inside when it's raining outside. It doesn't make it any less of a sport.
Yeah. Are you going to argue that Monopoly is a sport?
Interesting question. Some people will say definitely yes. They will say if it's treated in a strictly competitive way with rules and regulations, with regular competitions, international competitions maybe and so on, if it has the same scale, then it will have the same context.
Okay.
I would never say no. Some activities are more sport-like than others.
Okay. Complete the sentence. Sport is.
Complete the sentence. Wow, that's the toughest question. Sport is one of the ultimate challenges physically and mentally that human beings engage in.
Speaking as someone who's written a bunch of history books, history is?
History is very, very dynamic. It's not easy to pin down. It's not always objective, but it is fascinating. And for me, the discovery phase of the history process, I mean, that in a sense, that happens first. The writing and the critical evaluation comes later. Discovering new things that have apparently been forgotten or neglected or disregarded is actually a big thrill.
I fully agree, yes. Yeah. Thank you very much for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure having you. It's been a pleasure talking to you. To learn more about Chia Boon Leong, please check out the BiblioAsia website at biblioasia.nlb.gov.sg. Nick, thank you once again for coming on the show.
And thank you, because I've enjoyed this just as much as you have.
Okay, great. If you've enjoyed this episode, subscribe to this podcast and the BiblioAsia newsletter. Thanks for joining us on BiblioAsia Plus.